This is The Spotlight, where we profile Namibia's biggest movers and shakers, brought to you by Namdeb, mining for good.
Good day, my name's Angie Scholes. We are privileged to have recently conferred Dr. Ben Theruka. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yes. So let us start with a bit of background. Who is Ben Theruka? Where were you born and raised, and what shaped your early life?
Yeah, I would say Ben Theruka is a man who was born from a family of 13 people. We were born at a farm originally in the vicinity of Kahanja, but then we moved to Windhoek. We are coming from a family where my mother and my father had only one room. In this one room, if I look at this studio is bigger than that room. And just imagine the 13 of us, we were sleeping next to each other, like in Afrikaans we call sardinkies. My mother and my father is interesting. I can recall that they had a bed, and this bed was like a door, and this on this normal door they put up a truss and they were just sleeping on that one. So in the same room also it was like also the kitchen. But being raised coming from that background, we knew poverty. We have grown up being poor. This is not one thing. And just like what you see today, you go to areas like Evelyn Street, you see how the people are living there. You see, when I saw this devastated flood which came, how the family is. For me, it's a background what I know. I came from that background. And yes, we went through school. And the most interesting thing was that when the people were moved from odd location now, the final movement happened in 1967. Most families were forced. It was a forced removal. It was not just like free to go. We were forced to be removed. And my father, interestingly, was one of those adamant people. Our family, we were the last people to move out of old location together with a governor. I'm not sure whether you know Mrs. Beans Governors, who was our representative at the African Union.
Yes.
We were the last. We were on the underside and they were on the top side. And in 1968, the government closed the water. And at that time, we were going to school to Katutura because we needed still to go to school. And we have to walk through those mountains from old location to the school in Katutura. And my father was adamant and say, we cannot move to Katutura because this is our house. He built that house. Irrespective how small it was home. So then the government, to that extent, they needed to say, look, they bribe my father, I will say something like that, because they ended up to give us, instead of this one room, they give us two big houses. Wow. And that led my father say, okay, now we can go. And this is where we are coming from. I ended up going to Debra High School. But when I went to Debra High School, my father passed away in 1970. And my mother was left home alone with 13 of us to see through school. My mother was doing work like working a household where she was ironing, cleaning, Monday to Tuesday at another one, Tuesday to Wednesday at another one. And you see, to make us ends meet. But then she insisted on one thing. She said, we need to go to school. And I can recall also one of the most important things. When my father passed away in 1970, my father called to me and said to my mother, ask my son to come down. I want to speak to him. He was laying in the bed in a hospital in Katutura. And then he asked me one thing, which remained with me. He said, my son, it's the last time that I'm going to talk to you, but you promised me one thing. He said, promise me that you will never drink and you will never smoke. And I kept that promise. In my life, I've never touched alcohol. I've never touched tobacco and all these things. So that was a promise. And the prominent thing, what everybody knows, they know us at school at Debra as the Bangrotir. I was given a name, Bangrotir. Now, Bangrotir, it happened also not for me to be alone. I found people like Advocate Vekwiri Koro, who was also schooling there. And the one also, Mr. Kandi Mwine also. And today is also somebody, what they call Dr. Rukesh Ngaite. So the four of us, we were called the Bangrotir. because we had nothing. I'm really, to be honest, this it's not like a joke. I had only one trouser, one shirt, one pair of shoes, one pair of socks. That's it. All of us, although we were called the bangrotir and such, we, in terms of academic, we worked hard because it was the only thing what we knew it will make a change in our life. So that is me. In short, this is what I went through coming from that background.
Very interesting story.
Yeah.
How did your journey into entrepreneurship start? What inspired you to take that path?
It started mostly after my days. My previous days after school now finished, basically I was a musician. Being a musician, we were living also not having any other income. We were going around, play in Okahanja. We got some money, travel to Lutherets, go wherever. So I kept on playing music. And I kept on from around about 1975 after I finished. Went to 1976, 78. And also ourselves at that point, we were like the Dilimani of SWAPO. During the gigs of SWAPO, we were the one playing for SWAPO as a band. But around 1979, something interesting happened. And that's what I'm saying. Sometimes family is the important things. I remember I came from the gig. We were playing in Katutura. And it was late. And when I came back home, my colleagues were not yet at home. So I thought, let me go to my mother's house. So I went to my mother's house, come to my mother's house. I knocked. It was around about 3 o'clock in the morning. And my mother said, wow, what's happening? I said, no, our friends there, they are not there, but they locked me out and I cannot go in. And I said, no, but okay, I will open the, you will come me, but you can sleep in your sister's room. But please, this is your sister's room. She went to, at that time, to the village. Please, you must look after everything. Don't make any problem. Yes, I said, mother, what else can I do? I just went in. But you know what happened is this, that when I went in, it was dark and there was a candle. So I took the candle and light it on. Stupid what I am. I put the candle wax on and I put it on the bedside. But being so tired, I overslept. When I wake up in the morning, that candle burned until it's been a hole in my sister's bedside. Sure, that morning I called mother, say no, we are in problem. So, well, then I left. But in the afternoon, I heard I'm being called at home. I must come. My sister came. I'm telling you, my elder sister looked at me and she actually told me who I was. She said, look at you. You went through school. I never went through school. At least you got your grade 12 and everything. But now you come, all what you have is just clothes. Because being a band guy, you need to wear nice and all these things. So, but basically, I had nothing. So you came and I destroyed this and that. Now, my mother was sitting there crying. Up to now, it's very emotional to me to think about that. But that tears of my mother, I thought, but my sister is right. What is it what I have? I'm still playing band, getting from school. And that was on a Sunday afternoon. The Monday morning, I went to our house and we were supposed to start playing. I said, colleagues, I'm leaving. I'm leaving Bent. This is not my life. I cannot continue this way. So I left Bent. And I thought to myself, I'm having a grade 12 certificate. With this certificate, I can go out and get a good job. So what did I do? I wear nice, it's even better than now. So I started to go in Windhoek from company to company looking for work. And then I present and no, I'm having grade 12. No, there is no work. I'm telling you, I went around for almost 6 months. There was no job. Sure. Then I thought to myself, what can I do? But then one day, on my way back, I saw these big lorries, but they mostly those were from Pupkewitz and Sons. But this lorries is having a lot of people. All of them, they are wearing overalls, but they are working. Then I thought to myself, say, wait, actually with this suit and this grade 12 thing, it does not give me work. So I asked my brother, at least he was working. So I said, can you buy me overall? So he bought me an overall. One day, Monday morning, I went myself to that trucks because those trucks used to stop at the police station in Karutura. I went and get into the truck. So some people looking to know, where are you going? I said, no, I'm also working at this company. Oh, okay. So I went in. On the way, after the lorry went into the yard, went on, and I asked the guys, I said, where is the guys who clean? They said, are you employed on the cleaning side? I said, yes. I said, no, those four or five guys going there is the one who are doing the cleaning. So I went behind them. They were grown-up men. At that stage, I was a little bit also a young boy. So I went with them and I asked, I say, where is my broom and what? They say, oh, you are employed with us? I say, yes. I went and started to work at Pupkewitz. And basically, I employed myself.
Yeah.
I worked there for about 2 to 3 weeks. But then the managers, one of them, they started to observe, and I'm telling you, I was working up. I was cleaning the windows. I was sweeping the floors. I was just happy to work. I didn't like to just to go and sit at home doing nothing. And then one day, the two managers, actually the senior one and the young, they were talking to each other. They say, but who's this person? The other one said, no, is it not you who employed him? No, I did not employ him. So then they called me, say, you come here. What is your name? I say, my name is Bernard. I said, now, between the two of us, we employed you. I said, no, I just needed work. I said, you mean you employ yourself? I said, they started to laugh. Now, who's going to pay you? I said, really, to be honest, I will be happy just to work. I have been at home over 6 months, no work. But now, who's going to pay you? I said, really, I don't need pay. All what I need work.
Yeah.
So this is where it started. I started to work at Pupkewitz, and then they said, okay, we are going to pay. I think we got paid $12.50 now per week. Yeah, $12.50 per week, because per month it was run about, it never reached $50. So for me, I was happy. I started to work on that one, and it's become an income. So it's where my journey on work and all those things started there, and then after that, the sky became the limit. I moved from one position to another one. I went from this section to that one and to that one. And later, I became a lorry driver, and I've done everything at that level.
You built a shopping mall using your own funds. Can you walk us through how you managed to finance and execute such a large-scale project?
And the company what I started was Ben's Building Supplies. This is where Ben's Building Supply started from. Started because of that.
Yeah.
It did not start because of anything else. And then with independence, it became a bigger company and so on. And now, where does the mall come from? I recall that I traveled with my wife. And I always tell most men and say, they say behind a successful woman, there is a woman. That woman, she's sitting there. She don't want to be seen. But she played a big role. Because sometimes I take decision and then she look at it and say, but is it right what you are doing? I say, what is it? Why you don't do this? Then most of the time, what she says is right.
Yeah.
I say, it's fine. So we went to South Africa. And most of the time now we're traveling, we go to buy material. And one day morning while I was sitting, I was reading a newspaper at the hotel. While I'm reading this newspaper, I'm seeing a shopping mall being built on the outskirts of Soweto. And the message is saying, this is a black man and his name is Richard Maponya. And now this is Maponya Mall, which is being built. And I thought, okay, we can do that. So then the rest is history. Now, how did I finance it? Basically, I didn't have real money, to be honest. I went to the banks. They look at it and they laugh and say, listen, this is a 400 million project.
Yeah.
Where is the collateral? But then there was a young man, Mr. Hamkonda, Osman Hamkonda. this young man was working for Ben Winduk. And he said, are you sure you really want to do that? I say, no, I'm sure. I say, can you not give me an overdraft just of 5 million? Then Osman said, no. My capacity, what I'm having, I'm allowed to give up to 5 million overdraft. So Osman gave me 5 million overdraft. I started to build. And then the value that I've built became around about 15 million. Then Osman went back to the board. I said, but this guy is having a value of 15 million here. Why don't we increase his overdraft? So my overdraft started from 5 million, become 10 million, become 15 million, become 20, 25, 30. And the bank all the time say, but he's still building. No, I don't know. They didn't want me to build. What is it? So I'm telling you, I went on like that until I finalized the building. Yeah, one by one on that overdraft. Yeah, so this is how I went about.
How were you able to identify which business opportunities will generate maximum returns on your investment?
You see, this is some of the myth, what we think you can see already what can.
Yeah.
The most important thing what one need to do in life is this. You must do something what you know. You cannot just want to become a mechanic and you have never learned.
Mechanic and then you're a lawyer.
Yeah, and a lawyer. You cannot do that. So businesses, opportunities, most of the time they are there. We think that everything is already have been done. It's not true. The only thing is this, you look at things, what everybody is doing, and you try to do better.
Yeah.
And that was the most important thing, like me. What I have done when I started to work as a contractor, I insured my employer, now the owners of the building. I told them one thing. I say, you see me today, and you see me tomorrow, and you see me after tomorrow. If I build this building and tomorrow is having a crack, it's because I've done something wrong. I will come and repay it for free. If I build this building and tomorrow you take a hammer and you break a door, I will come and replace it, but then you will pay for it. So trust is the most important thing what people forget.
Yeah.
And then one of the most important thing is quality. Everybody, even you go into Pep Store, you don't go into Pep Stores and take a shirt without looking. You still want quality, but you forget that Pep Store don't sell that quality. Quality of everything, everybody, everything what you have, you would like to have quality. So, and this is what I, in my life, what I said, that's what one need to do. Firstly, if you go into the market and you produce quality, then your name goes already in front. Everybody will come and say, but who did this for you? No, so sure, but it look good. It look good. How much is it? It costs so much. And also, this is what I can tell you now. I say, Oshana Mall, what we have, is the cheapest mall in Namibia in terms of rent. But the standard of Oshana Mall, you can compare to any mall in the world, is upmarket. We keep it upmarket.
How have you managed to stay financially disciplined over the years?
It's an important and valid question. And this is, today I'm having so much money that I don't know what to do with it. It never exists. The more you get, the more you lose if you don't let it feel at home. And this is where, when about money discipline, your salary, I find people and say, yeah, this month my budget just balanced. I say, show me how did it balance. I went and pay Pick and Pay, and I went and pay Edcas. Yeah, I'm now left only with $2, the balance. I say, now which money did you put away? No. My balance, my money have balance.
As long as it balance.
As long as it balance. Now, you need to keep. That's where the money is invested. Keep the money. That's what you get. Built on it.
Doctor, thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
That was The Spotlight, where we profile Namibia's biggest movers and shakers, brought to you by NAMDIB, Mining for Good.